As COVID-19 pandemic lock us down in our homes, it may be a good time to think about estate planning. One of our lawyers, Lisa Glassman, specializes in estate planning and joins us for this podcast. Welcome, Lisa. Can you share your background with our audience?
Sure. Hi, I'm Lisa Glassman. I'm a real estate and wills and trust attorney. Been in Florida since I was about 6 years old and a parklander since 2004.
So how long have you been doing the estate planning?
So estate planning came to me during the crash in 2006 and 2007 when all I did was real estate law and I had to diversify. Mm-hmm. So a good friend of mine taught at the local law schools and helped me get a good handle on wills and trusts, and it just blossomed from there. So that's pretty much 50% of our practice now.
Wow. And to me, my experience with estate planning is really comes from trust for your family home. So are those is there different laws in different states based on where your house or your assets are?
Yes, each state has different laws when it comes to wills and trusts, and there's a lot of fraud and people that are taken advantage of down in Florida.
Right.
So our rules for wills and trusts are pretty strict.
I see. And then would you have to open different wills and trusts for different states you have assets in, or is this like you can do it in Florida and it will cover other states?
Well, a good estate plan would include a revocable trust, and then you could add your properties from those other states to your trust, even if it's okay. A Florida-based trust. So let's say you're a Florida resident, but you've got a vacation home in North Carolina. You could add that vacation home in North Carolina to your Florida trust in order to avoid probate.
Got it. And then when you mentioned these trusts, revocable and irrevocable trusts, can you explain a little bit what the differences are?
Yeah, a revocable trust is a document, no more than it's a trust agreement created by you to manage your assets during your lifetime and then distribute the remaining assets after your death. The person who creates the trust is called a grantor or a settlor, and the person responsible for the management of the trust assets is the trustee.
Got it. And who usually act as a trustee? Is that the law firm or?
Most of the time, people will serve as their own trustee during their lifetime, and then they would have a spouse or a family member to serve as a backup trustee. Not to say that a bank or trust company couldn't also serve, but if you're looking to minimize costs, you would usually have a friend or family member serve in the trustee role.
Got it. There are other types of trustees. I did some research about there's some living trusts and AB trusts. I didn't really go too much into it, but can you help explain a little bit these terms?
Sure. There's many different types of trust in Florida that you can choose from. The simplest one is something called a Totten Trust, which is really just making something payable on death with your bank. There's charitable trusts. There's irrevocable life insurance trusts. Mm-hmm. There are spendthrift or generation skipping trusts to do. So you really have a wide variety of choices when it comes to estate planning in the state of Florida.
Okay.
The AB trust you mentioned is really a tax planning device so people can take advantage of tax benefits.
Got it.
When that's a necessity in somebody's estate.
Got it. And is this something that if I was moving to Florida, let's say, from another state, should I wait? What's the general recommendation? Should I wait till I establish residency in Florida before I create a trust? Or this is you can start it before you establish residency?
Well, establishing residency in Florida is pretty easy. You're just going to file some forms with the county.
Okay.
And then, of course, get your driver's license and voter's registration, things like that in order. But it's very important not to let slip your updating of your estate planning documents when you move to Florida. Like I said earlier, Florida is pretty strict. Mm. So the laws in New Jersey or New York or Illinois don't compare. For instance, they may not require two witnesses on the document. And in Florida, we do.
I see.
Things like that. So there's good things to change once you get here to make sure your documents comply with Florida law.
Got it. What are some of the concerns people may have for creating a trust? Because, you know, I would think there's a sense of losing control.
Well, that's a common misconception, because during your lifetime, you have the ability to withdraw money or assets from the trust at any time and in any amount. Mm-hmm. If you become incapacitated, whoever your backup trustee is authorized to continue to manage your trust assets, pay your bills, and make investment decisions. But this is the benefit. Like, right. A lot of people think that by putting an asset in the trust, they're losing control. In fact, they're not. Everything's still tied to their own social security number if it's a revocable trust.
I see. And maybe that's something I don't fully understand then between. So the revocable trust, the assets actually are part of, it's tied to your social security number, not through some other tax ID, entity tax ID.
Correct.
Got it.
During your lifetime, it's your own social. Once you pass, then the trust might need a separate tax ID.
Got it. And then what if, in terms of the, I think there's a lot of times when you do estate planning, the topic of living will and other directives come up. So is that usually something that's, part of the estate planning cycle, like the flow along with the trust, or something that you should do differently?
100%. You have to have something called a pour over will that will work with the trust. If you forget to fund your trust, mm-hmm. funding the trust is basically putting assets into the trust, then you will need that pour over will as kind of a backup plan to make sure your assets get to where they need to be, which is in the trust. And then along with that, you need a durable power of attorney, a healthcare surrogate document, living will. Those are related estate planning documents that make up your estate plan to make sure that you're covered in any instance.
Got it. And then, probate courts, is something you hear about. Hopefully you don't deal with it too much times in your life. But, can you explain a little bit the role of the probate court and how the trust and the will process with the probate court, how's it related?
Sure. Probate is a court-supervised process for identifying and gathering the assets of a deceased person, paying the decedent's debts, and then distributing the decedent's assets to his or her beneficiaries. So there's a procedure under Florida Probate Code that talks about how this is done. Mm-hmm. And there's two types of probate. There's formal administration and summary administration. Sometimes you don't need a formal administration if the assets are under a certain value.
I see.
And so a summary administration simply jumps in to take care of what needs to be dispersed to different people.
And what I read before is that when you do a trust, if done correctly, it can benefit the how quickly you go through the probate process for the folks that are inheriting the assets. Is that true or?
Absolutely, because with a trust, the trustee has immediate control. If you just have a will, then the personal representative, who's like the executor under the will, can't act immediately. They have to first be appointed by the court. And sometimes that takes months at a time. So even though you may have a will, there's nobody in charge that can do anything or sign anything or make any payments until they're officially appointed the personal representative by the probate court. Whereas in a trust situation, the trust successor trustee steps into the immediate role as manager of that trustee once the original trustee is incapacitated or passes away.
Okay, that makes the process much easier than during the transition time.
Yes, and less expensive too. The probate court costs about 3% of your total assets, mm-hmm. plus costs. So if you can avoid that, a trust is the way to go.
Right. And is it difficult to set up a trust? It sounds like there are a lot of benefits. So, but always, do something, a lot of paperwork, there's a hesitancy for people to do that. So what's the involvement usually to set up a trust?
It's not difficult to set up a trust as long as you have a lawyer well-versed in trusts, because you definitely need an attorney to be able to find the right plan for you. Mm-hmm. If you just have an attorney that just does what they normally do for everybody, a one size fits all type of trust, mm-hmm. that's not going to be the best plan for you. You also need to make sure that the trust is funded. Many times we'll create a trust for somebody and the trust is great and according to their plan. However, they put it in the safe deposit box and never touch it again. And they never you know, fund their trust. And that's a key to making sure the estate plan works.
So when you fund, so basically you have to set up a trust and then you have to put your assets into that trust to fund it. Is that the right understanding?
Yes. So what we do in our practice is we set up the trust with the clients, and once it's signed, it's set up, and then we give them instructions on what to do next, what the next steps are. And that includes going to their banks and making sure their accounts get retitled, maybe changing some beneficiaries in 401ks, mm-hmm. IRAs, mm-hmm. things like that, and then perhaps moving your real property into your trust if that's called for under the plan.
Got it. And is that usually, why is it separate? Why wouldn't you transfer when you set up the trust? Is that, wouldn't that be more convenient to do at the same time?
It's a two-step process because the trust has to be set up first in order for the bank to make those changes to the account. So it's always been a two-step process. If you do it in one step, many people get excited and try to move the assets into the trust before it's even created.
Yeah. Well, I think the problem is, I know I'm a bad procrastinator sometimes, and that's the downside of doing two steps. Sometimes people forget, like you said, and or something comes up and they never get back to it. But
so a good estate planning attorney will always follow up with you to make sure that those second steps are done. You know, we have a system in our office that the file does not get scanned or put into storage until the person decides whether or not they're going to move their home into that trust. So we do have a good checklist of following up with them. Now it's up to them to get their bank accounts and things like that into the name of the trust. But most people, if they're given the instructions, will follow it.
Oh, that's good. That's good to know. And what are the things that sometimes, you know, slow down creating a trust? Is there, like you mentioned, residency, make sure you have the right paperwork with, you know, signatures and so on. Any other things that, you know, someone who's thinking about, you know, getting a trust set up should prepare for before they, you know, contact an attorney and start the process?
Sure. So what usually stops people from creating a trust is the cost of the trust and the paperwork. People don't like to, you know, spend a lot of money on estate plans, and they also don't like to have to think about their demise. But it's really, if you think about it, it's a really loving thing to do, to create a plan for your family. If something happens to you where you're incapacitated, wouldn't it be great to have a whole, a guide to taking care of that person as to what they would want, what their preferences are as far as staying in their home or not? Here's where to go to for, you know, this account or that account. It's really a very loving thing to do. So what stands in the way of people doing it, the cost and the paperwork, really should be something that they say, okay, I can get over this hump because in the long run, this is what's going to be best for my family.
Right. And also you avoid, as you mentioned earlier, the probate cost and then the delays, you know, in setting up the, you know, to get access to the assets.
100%. I mean, there really is very little downside to having a trust. If you have a will, like we said earlier, you have to go through the probate process. What's worse is some people don't have any wills, and then everything has to go according to the Florida statutes.
Wow. Okay. And do you know how long that sometimes takes? If you didn't have a will and, you know, rely on the statutes to decide.
So we're doing one right now where the person didn't have a will and had no immediate family, and we're having to hunt down cousins and grandparents and all kinds of family relations and prove, like, who's passed, who's alive. And we're into it for over a year right now.
Wow. This is where you want the whole family tree has to...
Yes. And we're doing, like, an heir search. And what's unfortunate is there's not even a lot of money at stake. So even though it's not a lot of money at stake, we can't just give it to the person that they were closest to. You know, there's a Florida statute on point that says this is who, you know, Florida intestate laws say who the assets go to. And it's unfortunate when we have remote heirs that, you know, don't even want to cooperate. They're just, they don't feel like they're getting anything. So why?
Right. And the cost of that will be deducted from the estate, right, I assume?
Correct. Yes. Those heir searches can be very expensive. So it makes sense to either lay out in a will who you want to inherit your things and your assets, or go for the trust, which is even better than the will.
And when you transfer an asset, like a house, into the trust, what about the mortgages on the house? Does that have to be renegotiated, or is that something that's transparent?
Usually the mortgage companies are pretty flexible if you're moving the home into a revocable trust. Mm-hmm. But as a precaution, we always have our clients contact the mortgage company to see what, if any, requirements need to be met before moving the home into the trust. Some banks want to see the draft deed. Some banks don't care. Some banks say no, but that's very rare. Most banks will work with you to just move your home to the revocable trust.
Okay. And in terms of, when you have how should you have this conversation with your family? Because I would think that, you know, this is, does the trustees, you know, people who are backup trustees, need to be aware of your decisions and what your preferences are. How should you have that family and your potential trustees?
The key is to say, okay, right now I'm my own trustee, but in case something happens to me, this is where you can find my important paperwork. So like in case you change your mind about who your successor trustee is, I don't usually recommend giving them a copy of it. I usually recommend telling that backup trustee, if something happens to me, this is where my documents are. So that way, if you change your mind as to who has to be the trustee, it's more easily done without a copy out there.
And then is there like a lot of instances of people contesting the will or the trust setup? Or this is something that, it's sort of, I'm just curious how that process works. If someone says, I don't agree with, what my parent is, set the trust set up.
So anyone can challenge anything at any time. It's more, it's less likely in a trust situation because that trust is not filed with the court. The will, however, is filed with the court and must be done so 10 days within the death of that person. So it's more likely than not that any kind of litigation over who gets what would be done in the will context rather than the trust context.
The trust. Interesting. Okay. So that's another benefit of the trust, meaning that there's less drama associated with the trust versus the will then.
Yeah, Florida trust law does not have a specific procedure for identifying and paying creditors at death. The creditors have up to 2 years from the decedent's death to file claims against the estate. So, the trustees may be reluctant to distribute trust assets to beneficiaries until they're satisfied the claims have been paid. Sometimes they'll choose to open a probate estate, but that's rare. Most of the times, if everything is in the trust, they can avoid having to do the probate.
Oh, wow. Okay. And is there let's say you set up a trust and would you need to maintain it? I think you mentioned a little bit earlier of doing it, managing yourself. What does that involve?
Well, it's very simple. Once you've moved the assets into your trust, there's not much involved during your lifetime because let's say you have a checking account and you move it into your trust. Maybe next time you get checks, it'll just say the word trustee at the end of your name. So really, you just want to make sure your accounts are in there and things like that. The key to trusts are not putting in your IRAs or 401ks, but that might be taxable.
Right. I see. And what if you have acquired more assets after your trust is created? Then you transfer into the trust
Absolutely. You can think of a trust as like a bucket. And during your lifetime, you're going to put stuff in the bucket and take stuff out of the bucket. Always constantly changing. So you'll notice when you read your trust, it's going to be very general. It's not going to refer to many specific assets because we want it to grow with you over time.
Each time you do that, do you have to modify any documents, or this is it's sort of like an entity that you just transfer assets into?
That's correct. It's just an entity you're going to put assets into. If you have a change of trustee or a change of beneficiary, then yes, that's going to call for an amendment to the trust. But most of the time, if you're just moving in and out of assets out of the trust, you're not going to have to make amendments to the trust each time.
And so there are a lot of benefits to, you know, creating a trust. So if someone wants to get started, you know, what should they, you know, look out for in term? I mean, I think you mentioned a little bit that there's a lot of fraud-related laws. I'm assuming there's a lot of fraud around this topic. So how do you protect yourself in finding the right partner, you know, in terms of getting the right credentials? You know, what are your advice on that?
I always recommend interview at least two different attorneys that specialize in the trust area and find out, you know, who's a good fit for me, who do I feel most comfortable with, who has the best knowledge and experience to pick the trust that I need, and make sure that they deal with the reality of the endless choices we have in Florida to find the best one for them.
And you mentioned there's tend to be specialties that they teach in law schools and so on. How, like, is there some discussion, like some questions you should ask the potential lawyer, law firm, why or not, like how up to date they are to the latest statutes?
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, you want to know, like, are they taking their continuing legal education? When was the last time they attended an update to trust law? We are constantly, once a year, if not more, attending different seminars, reading different articles to find out the most up-to-date information. In fact, there's something new or relatively new called the trust protector provision that you can add to your trust. Let's say there's an ambiguity in the trust and somebody can't figure out what they're supposed to do under the trust. Well, a trust protector is an individual not yet named in the trust, maybe to be named in the future by the court if there's some ambiguous provision in the trust that needs to be interpreted. And that's a wonderful new addition to Florida trust law that we have seen recently, and we're including that in our new trusts.
I see. So for me to understand, so that's someone that you can later, like say you set up the provision and later on you say, you know, my brother is the one to decide any discrepancy. Is that how it works?
So this is how it would work. Let's say there was a beneficiary that was disputing something in the trust, and the trustee said, no, that's not the right, you know, that's not the right reading of that trust. And they come to a standstill. The court could appoint a trust protector, an independent third party, to say, no, this person is going to help settle this dispute. Or maybe there's a situation where both trustees have died, like the person that created the trust died and their backup trustee died. And there's no provision in the trust for naming another backup trustee. So the beneficiaries could maybe have this trust protector come in to help out.
Got it. Okay. Is it like an insurance you pay that, like the insurance will pay for it type of thing, or this will be coming out of the trust itself or the...
No, it would be coming out of the trust itself. There's Florida trust law dictates what the compensation would, what reasonable compensation would be to the trustee and the trust protector.
Got it.
Now the trust protector is pretty rare, but it's a nice backup plan.
Interesting. Okay. Good to know. And also, like, when you are trying to set up a trust, you know, given the COVID-19 pandemic everyone's living through right now, can this be started remotely, or this is something that you have to do in person and all the paper has to be signed?
So the beginnings of setting up the trust, that absolutely could be done over the phone, through Zoom calls, Microsoft Teams, any way that you have to speak with a lawyer and make sure that your interests are expressed. The lawyer will then draft the documents for your review and approval. And then once you've approved everything and are ready to sign, you would have to work with a mobile notary in order to get those signed at this time. Right now, Florida's new law about electronic will signing doesn't come into play until July.
Okay. But that after July, then you can digitally sign the will documents then?
Yes, that is what the statute envisions. Whether that's going to be done on a regular basis or not, I'm not sure. Maybe because of the COVID situation we're under right now, it may be quite handy. But in a typical situation, I would prefer to have my clients come into the office so I can make sure they understand what they're signing. But there are ways to speak on the phone, do the Zoom meetings to make sure clients are happy and understand the steps necessary to protect their assets.
Absolutely. And it's quite important. It's one of those things that you don't want to make a mistake. You know, you don't want to take any chances to get that challenge later. So,
yes. Yeah, so what we're doing to avoid any issues like that is even if our clients are signing with a mobile notary right now or at a local UPS store, we're still having them scan us a set of the documents so we can see that they were executed correctly. Because a lot of times people will miss an initial or miss a signature or a notary. And those things are essential to making sure your documents are valid. And you can't have documents that aren't properly witnessed and notarized in the state of Florida.
Absolutely. I remember the very first time, you know, you sign a mortgage and then, you know, you had to learn how to sign your full name, you know, correctly, you know, cannot oversign or undersign, you know, all that.
Yes. And we see a lot of that. Yeah. We have people practice their signatures in advance of the appointment.
Well, you know, it's one of those things people don't write as much as used to. And then, you know, signing a signature, it's probably the few times they actually use a pen, you know, so definitely a challenge. So.
It's true. But like, as long as the signature somewhat looks like theirs, and that's the benefit of having the two witnesses and the notary there. The key is that the witnesses must be independent. They shouldn't be family members. Certainly shouldn't be people named in the will. So there's in addition to people signing, there's also requirements when it comes to the notary and the witnesses themselves.
Oh, wow. Okay. And then normally your estate planner law firm would help you find someone who's who can be a witness, serve as witness?
Yes. So typically the witnesses in a law office would come from the staff in the office. Mm-hmm. But right now I have clients signing at UPS stores where as long as there's the notary and two witnesses also as employees in the store, they're all doing the signings. It's amazing. And then neighbors are serving as witnesses if we have mobile notaries. So we're signing on porches and patios given our nice Florida weather.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And, you know, recruit your neighbors for something.
Yes, and what we're doing is making sure everybody signs with separate pens and even sometimes separate pages. So that way nobody's getting exposed to any viruses and things like that. We're taking every precaution. So in one instance, we have the testator or the will signer sign one page and then the witnesses signed an additional page. Normally they would all sign the same page, but because of the virus, we're having them sign separate pages.
That's very, that's pretty creative.
We're doing everything we can. To help people make sure they have estate plans in place.
No, absolutely. And especially given, you know, so many tragedies around, especially in New York. And, it's definitely a time to think about this sort of difficult topic and prepare ahead of time. So,
absolutely. It's for the benefit of everybody involved that we take these precautions.
Well, thanks for this very educational talk. And I think I learned a lot and hopefully... we'll get an audience, and then if they wish to ask more questions, we'll send it to you if I get any. So,
excellent. I always say ask Lisa the lawyer, so happy to help at any time.
No, I think this topic is one of those situations where people don't like to talk about it, and then hopefully they hear this and they understand it's an easy thing to do, And it's something that they basically get ahead of the, you know, the probate process. So net, you're it's a benefit. And but a lot of people may be shocked initial startup costs and startup paperwork and everything. But it's something that if they don't do it now, someone would do it, and it may be much more complicated when you have to get probate courts involved later.
Yes, and as many lawyers in the community will accept MasterCard or Visa. They will also, you know, make the person feel very comfortable and look at it as a pragmatic plan as opposed to an analysis of the person's entire life. There's only certain things that we need to know in order to make a good plan for somebody. So we'll ask very pointed questions rather than have the person have to detail every single aspect of their life.
Right.
We know what we're looking for. A good experience planner, estate planning attorney, will ask certain questions to get to the best plan for that person.
No, this is very, very educational. And thank you, Lisa, for a very enlightening discussion. Hopefully those of you looking to plan ahead and avoid probate costs also learned a little from Lisa. As always, please feel free to send us your comments. We would love to hear from you. And any questions for Lisa, please feel free to email me and I will forward on. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.